For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey everyone, the following is a special sneak preview of the new Gloves Off podcast, which is an unfiltered look at the week's events in goalkeeping that's hosted by world-renowned GK analysts Bill Reno and Saskia Weber. And if you want to make sure that you never miss an episode of any of our fantastic new shows, all you have to do is subscribe to the Union GK app. For more info, go to www.theuniongk.com or download the Union GK community on Apple or Google Play stores. Thanks for making Gloves Off possible, and on with the show.
All right, welcome to Gloves Off. We got Magid out of the way. We're smooth sailing now. Magid stepped in last week for you, Sasa. We're glad to have you back, but catch us up a little bit. We missed you. It's been 2 weeks.
Oh, gosh, nothing. I had 2 games last week, so that's why you didn't have me around. It's good to be back, for sure. Lots of interesting games in the league last year. Lots of interesting things going on for us to talk about. I'm in the middle of redoing this room, so if that's why you see junk behind me, that's it, but it is what it is.
Everything's growing, whether it's your room, whether it's goalkeepers' games. We're all moving in the right direction, so that's all right.
Yeah.
That's all right.
I just didn't get it done in time. Redoing the office, so. But hey, Stan, what's going on, Stan Anderson?
Hey, Stan.
What's
yeah,
up?
It's good. Yeah, yes. I'm glad we're doing this live because it's nice to see the in real time feedback, but also more pressure again on Magid more than us. But
yeah, we're good.
No,
to go.
It's good. Now yeah. I will say you mentioned the games. I want to hold off on that because my timeline is still blowing up with Tim Howard. He got named to the U.S. Soccer Hall of Fame.
And yes,
yeah, and you know, it's obviously a huge honor, right? That's the highest honor in U.S. soccer, outside of like a team achievement.
And I mean, for weeks now, good friend of mine, and I trained with Timmy when little Timmy, when we were both in New Jersey as well. So
yeah, give us a little bit on training characters.
I was with. Oh no, he was younger than me. Just so athletic, so intense and focused. With Tim Mulqueen would train us, and you know, I was in college at the time, or just out of college at the time. But just knew he had something special, 100% something special. His dedication, just the way he played at such a young age, and just was a sponge for coaching. So,
It's
I've known him a long time.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. It's funny hearing it. It seems like goalkeepers kind of gravitate around each other when it comes to training. You know, it's not too uncommon to say, oh, I trained with that person, I trained that person. They kind of got to some similar level. So that's I'm not surprised to hear. But I mean, fast forward, right? He got into the U.S. Soccer Hall of Fame, big career, played overseas in England. I think his stint with Everton is probably the highest peak. Had time with Manchester United, came back and played with the Rapids here. And again, I mean, I forget the exact date, but this is weeks ago now. He's been put in. And I think all those awards for him are, and the accolades are all very deserved. Obviously, he put a lot of time in, arguably our top goalkeeper ever, men's or women's. You know, like you can make a strong argument for it. I think
I wouldn't say men's or women's, but okay.
He's in the discussion.
There are no World Cup trophies there.
And on that point, you know, when Scurry got in, and I think this is where my frustration is where I see where everything Howard's getting, I'm like, okay, I'm okay with all that, like, in itself, I'm fine. But when I see when Scurry got in, I mean, first of all, it was her fourth year. So Howard obviously got in his first year, inducted in his first year. I don't know what the percentage was. I'm sure it was around or at 100%. But Scurry didn't even get into her fourth year. And I know there's been some revamping with how the Hall of Fame does their voting, which I've been glad to see. I don't know. I mean, if
it's not just it's not just a bunch of old white men.
Yeah. It's people who.
Oh, if we're gonna be gloves off. I'm gonna get gloves off because I will probably never be in the Hall of Fame, which is ridiculous. But and a lot of other of my world champion teammates, and that is just part of the issue for me. But go ahead with what you were saying.
Well, no, I think this is like the bind, right? You've got. Yeah, I think a lot of people devalue the Women's World Cup and say, like, oh, that's like a men's Gold Cup equivalent, maybe a little less. And they throw out this argument of, like, well, it's more, there's more competition on the men's side of the Men's World Cup as opposed to women's, where, you know, you're going to get five or six, I think, that are really competing every World Cup. But for me, it's just really kind of, I mean, one, it's a blow, right, of a needless one to just kind of cut someone's legs out of, saying, yeah, your accomplishments really aren't that good. I mean, there's not a higher level, if we just stay with Scurry, there's not a higher level Scurry could have played at. She did it, you know? So you can't say, well, she didn't get to this level. There was no other higher level there. So, I'm with you. It seems like the revamping process, and I'd love to learn a little bit more about it, but it seems like the revamping process has been pretty crucial. Because they're seeming like that you can see some of the voting percentages have changed notably. But Scurry first was eligible in 2014 and then didn't get into 2017. Had a wonderful speech, really enjoyed listening to it. But I feel like I got this sense. It was like, yeah, well, pat on your back, you know, congrats, you kind of did something. Anyways, we're going to move on with the men's team. It's like, look, it's the U.S. Soccer Hall of Fame. It's not the U.S. Men's National Team Hall of Fame. So I don't know when you think.
No,
of
like, I'll put it this way. And I've always said this. If the men won a World Cup, the entire team would be inducted into the Hall of Fame. They'd build a wing for it. Like they would. They would build a wing. It would have like little like bronze heads of every player. It would walk through the men's World Cup room. Every single player on that team, the team itself would be inducted into the Hall of Fame. And you could come at me, anybody listening right now, but you know it's true. Period. Well,
I'll prove your point. The 1950 World Cup team that only won one game. And look, beating England is awesome. Oh. I love beating England. The whole team's in the World Cup. They just inducted the whole team
into the Hall of Fame. So you have, I'm sorry, do we have too many World Cups that you don't want to induct that many teams into the Hall of Fame? It's the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. And it's just indicative of that old male mentality that we are second tier. And it's like, well, yeah, yo, we've, it's so somebody explain it to me. The 91 team should be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
The 99 team should be in the Hall of Fame. And so on and so forth. There should be four women's teams in the Hall of Fame. Some players are still playing. So what? You know, you won a World Cup, the pinnacle of the sport for us, both on the men's and the women's side. And I'm sorry, we put just as much effort and energy, if not more, into being the best in the world because we didn't have the outlets we did in 91. Like you were scrambling to play. You were, you know, there weren't all the pro leagues. But what is your argument now? What is your argument? Women don't sell stadiums? What? I'm sorry. Last time I checked, you know, Liverpool selling out, Manchester United selling out over in Europe, Barcelona, like they're selling out their stadiums. You know, every time the U.S. women, we won in front of 90,000 people. We played in front of the largest crowd at Giant Stadium. We sold out every single NFL stadium we played. So your argument that people don't care about women's sports is just done and mute. That's obvious across the board with the, you know, with women's professional hockey, with everything. You're just an idiot then. And if that's your mentality as a Hall of Fame, like overseer or whatever you want to call these people, like then it's time for you to get out. Like, yeah. You know, it is. It's time for you to get out. It's like, you know, who are you? And you're not like the Supreme Court. And we wish we could get rid of half of them. So, like, let's get rid of half of you and get new people to have a bigger view and a more open-minded view on who should be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Half the 99 team isn't in the Hall of Fame. Tish got inducted. Tish Venturini got inducted with Tim, right? So great, but it's like a trickle. It's like, okay, look at the people that are in the Hall of Fame and tell me what, like, okay, they've been great advocates, some of them for the sport and everything like that. But last I checked, like, number one, like, you know, winning world championships is pretty the biggest thing you could do. And if you're telling me that, well, it's got to do with character, well, I think that's bullshit too, because, excuse me, I'm not allowed to say that, because there's some people in the Hall of Fame that have horrible character and don't even let me go there, you know? So it's like, I don't understand the Hall of Fame. And to me, like I said, I'll never be in the Hall of Fame, no matter, I've been in 2 World Cups, I've won a World Cup, everything like that. I've played pro all over the world, just like Timmy, just like everybody else. I think my what I've given back to the sport speaks. I've been a coach at the college level. I'm a broadcaster now. I'm a co-owner in a team. I'm helping raise awareness, everything. I'll never be in the Hall of Fame. Because they're never going to put a full women's national team in the Hall of Fame. It's not going to happen.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think the Hall of Fame for me is like the perfect time to set the record straight of like, hey, like this is a time to, you know, whatever anyone wants to say, like we can remember and set a standard for what something is or isn't. And you think of all these guests, like, I don't know if you've been out to Frisco to see the Hall of Fame. I forget what year they moved it out there, but I went in that first year. So I'm sure it's changed a bit since I've been out there. But you go out there and you can imagine a ton of fans, young or old, that are walking through. And they're seeing what U.S. soccer is telling them of like, hey, this is a standard. And they have, I don't know if you know this, but they have.
And this is our history.
Right. Like, this is our history.
And this is our history. Oh, and over there in the corner is the women.
Well, and they even have a section there, which I thought was, I was a little surprised. I actually kind of liked it. But it was a jersey from all of the reigning champs in college from Division I, II, III. And I was like, you know, I don't really know if Division III college is like something that I would personally include in the Hall of Fame. But it is cool to be like, hey, like, it's an inclusive thing of like everything that's going on. I think for me, that kind of opens a bit of can of worms. It's like, okay, well, you know, where else could you, like, do we take high school state champs? Like, I don't like, you can make some arguments, but I think it's cool to like walk in and see something like that. But then you're absolutely right of like, you know, whether like for the women to reach a threshold, it's like, you've got this sliver of like, well, if you get to this 0.1%, you get in there. On the men's side, it's like, hey, if you played like 20 games, like you can get in, like you have a good shot. So.
Right. And so listen, but look, if like for me, like what, 30 something caps or whatever, but that's over a span of 10 years I was on the U.S. national team. And, you know, listening to the podcast last week, you know, like those are the days. No, you didn't sub. That was it. You know, you didn't sub, you know, you're capped for over 100 and something games, but you're not playing in them. I mean, you're on the bench for over 100 and something games, but you're not playing him. And so, you know, those are the arguments. Well, but with the men, I'm sorry, Tony Miola, another great friend of mine. But if you go apples for apples with people and you say, all right, what have you done? Okay, you've played in several World Cups. Okay, check. You've played pro. Okay, check. Right? You've been an influence on the sport. Okay, check. So why then, where's the differentiation there? Where is the difference? You know, yeah. Like it's, oh, but okay. So if we're checking boxes on one side and then you're checking, oh, but let's add World Cup champion on the other side. Right. So either you have to hold it to the same standard or then have the men's Hall of Fame and have the women's Hall of Fame. Cause it's just ridiculous to me. It's absolutely ridiculous. And even to my friends and my friends that do vote, then you're not holding up the torch either. You're getting your jacket and you're like, peace, I'm out. Thanks for my red jacket and everything like that. And I'm just like, where is that voice? I have the voice here, but where is the voice to stand up for those players? Like, where is the argument from all of us, from U.S. soccer, from the women's side of U.S. soccer? Why isn't the 91 team in the World Cup, I mean, in the Hall of Fame? Why isn't the, I mean, you have a bunch of the players from the 91 team in the Hall of Fame. Yeah, Mia Hamm, you've got Michelle Akers, you know, but where are the other players? Where are the other players that won the World Cup? Oh, I'm sorry, 1950, you won one game against England, right? When you know, the ball was actually leather and like, it was like, you won one game and you're in the Hall of Fame.
Well, and I'm with you. And I think just so I'm sure there's someone out here thinking this, like, just to be clear, the 91 team got the Medal of Honor, which is like, it's a rare, a pretty rare thing to get. There's only ever been four given out. And you know, that was a pretty rare thing to get. But to be clear, the 1950 men's team, every single player, including the backup goalkeeper, they are in the Hall of Fame. Like, they didn't get the medal, which would probably would have been pretty fitting if we're being fair. But, like, you know, so it's, there's kind of tiers to this, and it's kind
like,
of funny.
Like, I agree with you. Like, wouldn't you flip that? Wouldn't it be the 1950 team would get, as a team, the Medal of Honor, right? As a team. But they didn't win the World Cup. They won a game. And then the 91 team won the World Cup. So every single player on that team should be in the Hall of Fame. And listen, if this was on the men's side and they were doing this to the men, I'd argue it too. I'd be like, why does the 1950 team have everybody in the Hall of Fame? And let's say the 94 men's, if they had won the World Cup, you know, although great showing, if they had won the World Cup, they should all be in the Hall of Fame. Like, I'm arguing that they should be, but the standard should be the same.
Yeah.
You were gonna fire me up.
No, it's good. I'm glad it started with this and didn't end with this. So I need to do a little bit more personal digging on how they do the voting now. It does seem like it's a lot better. I know there's a bit more transparency. I've seen voters just put which I've always appreciated, put the rationale of I voted for this person, here's why I did not vote for this person. But that's pretty rare. You know, you don't see a ton of people doing that. So I think there's still gains to be made there.
I do think it tends to be a popularity contest. Like, who's in the Hall of Fame, who's voting, and who's your friend that might be up for a nomination as well. Yeah. And, you know, and I don't know. It's I don't put much weight in it. I'm really proud. I, you know, sent Timmy a message and I was like, congratulations on the Hall of Fame. Of course, I sent Tish a message, congratulations on the Hall of Fame. But, you know, I'm just like, all right, it is what it is. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? It is what it is. I got two World Cup medals over there. So I'm like, you can hang your red jacket somewhere else.
Yeah, that's fair. You wouldn't trade those for the jacket. No,
I no, no.
Stan, let me first say I love the old picture.
He looks like Greg Brady, doesn't he?
He does. I was gonna try to guess the year, but I was like, I don't know if we're gonna try to guess. I don't know about a camp shot Hall of Fame. I feel like we're talking about voter bias. We might have some voter bias on that as well.
I mean, you know what? I would rather have a goalkeeper Hall of Fame where we like a bunch of, I don't know, like I think at least it'd be a little more across the board unless it's, you know, I don't know. I just think, first of all, Hall of Fames are Hall of Fames. And, you know, like I said, like everybody, people, I don't want to like knock people. They've contributed so huge, but when you see that's what makes me mad. Like, I'll never take anything away from Tony, from any of my fellow goalkeepers on the men's side and everything like that. You know, I loved training with them as well. They're my friends. They've worked their butt off. I mean, 300 and something games in the EPL, like, is huge. And you know, what Timmy has done and what he continues to do for the sport in broadcasting and even overcoming his own, you know, deficiencies to be able to be such a solid broadcaster. And like, I have nothing but respect for the guy. I just wish that it was like, it was even across the board. That's all.
No. And I think that's where the rub is. And to start, Stan, correct me, not a camp shot at Hall of Fame, although that would be interesting, but doing like a one through camp shot, doing a goalkeeper Hall of Fame. And I honestly, I love it. I think people, if we're just being honest, I think there are a lot of people who would be uncomfortable at the idea of there being more women than men in it, because they can't wrap their head around that idea. But then it's like the goalpost moving of like, well, for the men, if you do this, but for the women, you've got to get way over here. Like, you start doing that sort of stuff. Like,
well, that's the argument. The argument is, it's like, What is it? Because the women are so successful. Where does it end? Does it turn into basically a women's Hall of Fame with the men over here? Well, then I have to say to this, step up your game, man. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sorry. Yes, I have 4 stars on my hat. You're right. There's 4 world championships. And if you want World Cup championships, it has to be honored. It has to be honored. Like, I mean, there's a statue of Brandy outside of the Rose Bowl, right? And there's just, I don't know if you've ever seen it. Right. It was put in about 5 years ago. Myself, Brandy, Lori Fair were there and when they unveiled it. And so it's Brandy on her knees, you know, that iconic image when we won at the Rose Bowl. And then there's this beautiful like wall monument. And on the back is every single player's like name and then like personal signature. It's a really beautiful monument. You know, but the Rose Bowl can do something like that. The Rose Bowl can do something like that with all the iconic games that have happened in the Rose Bowl, right? All the championships, all the everything that's gone, whether it's football, whatever it is, but they can do that right in the front of the Rose Bowl, right? But the Hall of Fame, it's...
No. Well, and look, at the end of the day, like you're preserving history and you're sharing that with someone else. I mean, you know, Jimmy Douglas, who is the goalkeeper who played for the men's team in the 1930 World Cup. There's like a few pictures of him, but there's no video. And it's really just kind of a storied account of, hey, this guy was good. And there are many, many others that kind of fit that spot where they played. And there's not really anything for the current fandom, fans, players, coaches to go look at. They have to take people at their word of like, hey, like, people back then said this person was legit and we're going to remember that person. And if they get in or don't, like that drastically changes their narrative for how they're remembered and what the standard is and what things were like. And for me, that's where the Hall of Fame comes in. It's like, hey, you get to share to the future, like what the standard is. If you get your name in or don't get in, like it's a huge, huge swing.
I know this is a weird analogy, but it's almost like, yes, they have to play catch up with the women. It's almost like, look at baseball with the stats and the Negro Leagues. Right. So that just got implemented. First of all, why it should have always been like that. Right. Should have always been like that. But it's almost the same. It's almost like, oh, yeah, thanks, Bri. Here's your shirt. But, you know, here's so and so from like wherever he's in, and it's a huge hoopla. And it's just guys catch up. Like, but we've been playing catch up our whole life. Like that's it, you know, and. Listen, the best way to beat people is with success, right?
No, that's the truth. And I mean, that's where it comes at the end of the day for me. It's like the U.S. women, like, you know, there's not a tier that they're not hitting, you know, like if they either are like.
I like that face, by the way. Like,
But I mean, that's the truth, you know, like there's not like they could have done more. It's like, well, they really kind of topped out in a lot of ways. I mean, they didn't win literally every single game, but I mean, when you get to that level, you can't say, well, they should have done a little bit more. You can't like find a way.
Well, no, I mean, people were so harsh after, and so was I after the exit from this World Cup. But you know what? The world has caught up, and that's a fact. And you know, the U.S. can't rely on. I know we're getting off things, but the U.S. can't rely on being the fittest, being the hardest working, and playing one style and one system anymore. That's the truth. Like, you know, everybody else is playing pro all year round. Everybody's fit. Everybody's ready to go. Everybody can like play multiple styles and kind of, and we saw that in the World Cup and we'll see it again in the Olympics. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, and it's a two-way street in the standard, right? If the argument is, hey, men, step up your game and get to like, now going forward, if the women don't win World Cups, it's not like a convenient standard dropping of like, well, you know, like you don't get to say that. It's like, no, the standard is like you still go win. You've done it before, you go do it again.
Yeah.
Like selfishly, I get really annoyed that I think 2016 maybe, was the last time we had an American keeper named in the World 11 for Women's Awards. But it's been, you know, we're coming up on 10 years for that. We haven't had someone like, for me, it's like, that's the standard. It's not like, well, it is. And
and I know we're going to go into this with, I know Timmy had brought it up in his article in Soccer America, but I was reading the article and listening to Timmy's comments about if there had been a drop off the drop off in the quality. And we can go to the men's side or the women's side. And I was thinking about it in the sense of, yes, we had a run of great male goalkeepers like Tony Meola, Casey Keller, Brad Fiedel, Timmy Howard, Zach Steff. Like, we have a run. But I think when I think about it, I think in the beginning, we had a commitment to goalkeeping with the Timmy Mole Queens, with Paul Blodgett, with goalkeeper coaches in the beginning, and a commitment to goalkeepers that I don't think was on par with the rest of the world. The rest of the world had the same kind of equal level of commitment to goalkeeping, and like we've always talked about, gone are the days when you shove the goalkeeper in the corner, but now you're seeing a commitment to goalkeeping, or goal player, as Franz Hook wants to call it, that, Manchester United has like a goalkeeper coach for each goalkeeper. Like, there's like, and so where I think we are falling behind on that is, I don't think we've kept up with the pace of the commitment to a goalkeeper on a team. Like, I don't think that there are like a slew of quality goalkeeper coaches across the board enough to go around. You see kids that go to college and some schools don't even have a goalkeeper coach still. And so I think where we're seeing that drop off in that is that the commitment isn't there, whether the budgets aren't there or anything. So even on the academy level, on the club in Europe, you have academy, they have goalkeeper coaches, they have the whole thing. Here in the club level, you have maybe one director of goalkeeping for like 40 teams. Like, the commitment has dropped. The commitment's totally dropped. And so if you're wondering why the level of our goalkeeping has dropped, because the commitment around the world has raised and ours has either stayed stagnant or it's not growing fast enough.
Yeah, I think that last point's pretty crucial. And let me just read this quote by Howard here on, just so we can pray all this together. But basically, there was a big narrative of like Howard was the last great goalkeeper. And again, that is kind of debatable on what you want to see. But I think there's some truth to it for sure. And so he gets interviewed. And so he says, I think the goalkeeper coaching has dropped a level as well. If I'm being brutally honest, when you look at the top level goalkeepers that we produced through the years, they've always had high level goalkeeper coaches. I can say that because I've seen the worst of the worst. I've seen the best of the best in my career. I think high level goalkeeper coaching is down. The game has continued to evolve. And I don't know if our young goalkeepers are getting pushed as hard as they need to, to that breaking point. And, let me just say this real quick. You're free to say what you wish. I think for me, one, it's very, very difficult to say what the landscape of the goalkeeping coaching is like in our country, because I can't speak on South Dakota. Like, I don't know.
Of course. You can't make a blanket statement.
Right. So, but I do think there is like something, and kind of what you're getting at earlier is like, it does feel like things have kind of stalled a bit. I think this is a real big systemic issue of, where is the federation leading us? Where are the top goalkeeper coaches in the country? Where are they leading us? Whereas what it feels like is people, instead of bringing people to the table, they're getting hyper-focused on their one or two projects, and there's no sort of like, kind of bringing in that sharing, that helping, that raising of the tide. It just gets really, really funneled.
But I also think that, the problem with that is I think a lot of it comes down to finances as well. And I hate to say that because, we have the pay to play system and stuff, but the money's not going to the goalkeeper coaches. And what you still see in this country is, all right, we're going to grab that kid that just came out of college. We're going to let him coach our club goalkeepers and stuff like that. We'll pay him like $200 a week or something like that. And they're okay with that. But you're going to go and dump all this money into a head coach. And that's what I mean by the commitment. And that happens. Look, some clubs are on point with it. Absolutely. So that's why you can't make a blanket issue. But a lot, that's a very like systemic problem that we have with goal. And so then you're wondering why the goalkeepers aren't advancing. Also, there's a change in the way we know this. There's a change in the way goalkeepers play, right? It's like I said, Franz Hook, it's goal player. You're the 11th man. So are we developing our goalkeepers with the technical side of being that field player? And I don't think we have made that transition across like fast enough. And so I think you're seeing, when we see highlights and stuff, you're seeing the goalkeepers that we have kind of struggling with that, with the new changes and the growth and the change in the position, where I think, you know, if you look at the European side, you're looking at, like, and you say the top women, and we haven't been in the top, you're looking at a lot of those that are so good with their distribution, so tied into their defense, that they are that 11th player, which is what the world has, soccer has changed into. And so I think that is a lot of where that disconnect is. And that's how we have to develop our new goalkeepers, because that's how the sport's changed. And I think maybe we're still a little behind on that.
Yeah. So. No, and it's a real, I mean, again, and this is right what you're saying, it's a real systemic thing. Like, you've got to have a top-down approach to this sort of stuff. And, you know, if you're paying $200 a week, you're going to get $200 a week. Like, that's your investment and return are going to really, most often, that. So,
but you have to ask the parents that are paying $5,000 a year to play for, let's hypothetically, it might not be the cost, let's say for surf or something like that, to be a part of the organization. Don't hit me up. I don't know what your dues are. It's just an example, right? So, but your child's a goalkeeper, right? So you're getting a top, let's say you're getting like a top field player coach, a head coach, but you're getting that kid fresh out of college to coach your kid at goalkeeper, but that's what you're paying $5,000 a year for. And then on top of that, you're paying for private goalkeeping because you're not getting the quality of goalkeeping at your club. So that's a problem to me. Like, I'm paying my dues so you can get the best field player coach for all the other kids, but not the best coach for my kid who's a goalkeeper. And that to me is unacceptable.
Yeah. And that sort of approach for me is like, if you've got a really low level team, that's like, you know, the thought is, hey, we're just going to be playing here. And no one really has any aspirations to play after like this moment. You're going to play with this club and you're not really going to look at college. You're not going to look at pro. You know, like, I can kind of understand, okay, like, those places are going to cost less. You know, like, those are going to be a little bit looser. But when you're playing, when you're at a serious club with a serious acronym of whatever league you're in, you know, like, you should be expecting a high level of, like, hey, we're all wanting to, like, max out here. And in theory,
I agree with what Stan's saying. And Stan's saying clubs should subsidize their goalkeepers to seek goalkeeper training. And I agree with that. Why? If you bring a goalkeeper in and you don't have the quality of coaching and training that they need to develop as a goalkeeper, because you're putting all your money into the field player coaches, then you should subsidize the fact that they have to go outside of your club to get private goalkeeper training, because you're asking parents to pay on top of that $300, whatever it is, a week for private goalkeeper training, because your club isn't providing the quality that they need. So I agree with you, Stan, 100%.
Yeah, no, and it's a really nuanced thing, because I think from people outside looking in, they don't quite understand the dominoes of a hit with this. But that's a really great point there of, like, imagine if a forward, like, was really struggling on shooting the ball and they had to go to another play, like, one, that would be absurd, but also two, the club would be like, no, we need to take responsibility in that. When it comes to goalkeepers, and it is a very different position, I understand, but there's a lot of, like,
it's part of your team. Like, it's important.
Yeah. Like, yeah. You think, yeah. I think, unfortunately, it's become so normal for people to go get private training, which, if you want to do that on your own, in addition to, like, I don't think anyone really has a problem with it, as long as you're, you know, staying safe and everything. But if you're not getting enough, then yeah, absolutely. Like, the club needs to take responsibility, but, you know, it's a real power dynamic where,
yeah, and it's not going to happen.
Yeah. They can just not do anything. It's like, well, okay. Yeah. So, well, we'll move on to, no, it's good. And I'll be honest, like, a lot of this ties in, because we're going to look at some goalkeepers here that, what we're looking at it from a holistic sort of level.
Mike Maggi said, in all reality, I shouldn't exist as a private coach if the club was doing its job. I 100% agree with you, Mike.
I mean, 100%. You know, well, I mean, really, what the answer should be is, people who are doing private training, like, they should probably be brought into clubs. It's like, what, and whether that's a part-time, full-time thing, like, you know, the private coach, like, you know, I don't know if it really makes sense to erase them from the face of the planet, but yeah, they're, I think there's a little bit of truth to what Michael's saying.
Yeah. That's it.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
That's fair. But yeah, we're going to look at the NWSL today, and we're going to go through a few goalkeepers here. And I'm going to start in Portland. Now, I think people look at Portland, they're fourth in the table right now. You know, you probably feel good. You
but know, they think, weren't.
Well, and I think people are expecting, like, hey, like, they're going to make playoffs, you know, do all right. But to be fair, I think there's some valid questions to ask about Shelby Hogan, who's been waiting in the wing for a bit with Portland. And I rate her high still. But I think for me this season, you know, the start of the season was really poor. She's gotten better already, which I was really happy to see. But I think from her game, she's being asked to do things that I'm not quite sure that she's really quite ready there for, or it matches her play style. So I'm going to show a few clips here. And I think the big thing that kind of hurts her game is that her feet are pretty slow, but she has a lot of power. So you can see kind of this moment here. And I think this is something that a lot of goalkeepers, they can go close.
And you have Barb Banda. That's a whole podcast on its own, right? Yeah. And you know, coming with this through ball and everything like that. So the argument here with Hogan is I think she's a little deep on her line, and this is part of what we're talking about. Like, are you not reading the game properly? Like, there's pressure on the ball, right? So you have pressure on the inside of the ball. Banda's driving into the top of the 18, around the penalty spot. Your defender makes a slide to try to steal the ball from her. Banda maintains possession, but Hogan's so far back on her line that now she's doing that thing that I always say goalkeepers don't do, right? Don't say, oh my God, I should have been out there. I should have been out there sooner, and then just go. Because This is one of the best forwards in the entire world, and arguably right now in the NWSL, and she's waiting for you to do that. And so when this ball, like, these are the decisions that you're talking about, I think, where it's like the next level is that you, the anticipation as a professional and the understanding of what's going on in front of you, it's got to be proactive and not reactive. And this to me is like reactive goalkeeping. It's okay, I'm here. I'm maybe 3 yards off my line. This ball is like, it's a, you know, one for one tackle here. Like, they both go for the ball. I think she could have been closer. I think this would have gone a different direction for me.
No, absolutely. And I think you have to kind of know where your strengths and weaknesses lie. I mean, Hogan's not the quickest. She might have the slowest feet in the league. So knowing that, if you're going to put yourself in a position where you want to go down the line, you've got to sneak up a bit. And also sitting in here, like, I don't really know what it does for her here. I mean,
I don't know what she's worried about, because if she's worried about Banda chipping her, right? That chip's not on. It's a 50-50 foot race. And I can't see who the defender is on her right now, but it's a 50-50 foot race that she doesn't have the space nor the time to try to chip Hogan. And Hogan has to, in her evolution of professional goalkeeping, has to realize that and steal that space where you can, because now what's happened is she's trying to steal space and Banda's got the ball back on her foot and she's just like, thank you.
Well, and you can see, I mean, it's almost like 2-1 on the steps of, you know, if you know someone is fashion you, like, you have to really be mindful of this, but as Hogan steps up, like, her body gets really upright. It's very slow. It's sluggish. And even when she starts closing in on space, I mean, it's like, is that quick? Like, you either need to start higher or end up just getting set and make them come to you, because running down this line, she's just going to roll you every time.
Yeah. And so the decision here is not to go down, because basically as she's coming off and she's late and out of position coming out of her line, I think that she's got to realize that that ball bounced right back to Banda's foot. So she's got to stop, move her feet and stay big. And instead she's like, just continues forward. I'm going to go down. And that's not the play right there.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, you know, to give her a bit of credit, I mean, look, it's not an easy save. I think
it's not,
you know, but at the same time, for me, like, the problem isn't so much how difficult it was or wasn't, and more of like, did you know what was most efficient for you to do? And did you go execute on that? Cause even times when you do that, you play it perfectly, you still get beat, and that's going to happen. That's the game. But for me, like, kind of just circling all this, she's choosing a tool that's just not going to fit the job.
Right. And if you watch Banda's touch, she goes negative, yeah, right? So she takes the ball back away from Hogan out of her reach. So she's like, let me cut it back, because now you're never going to reach the ball. So she cuts this back towards the top of the six. And so she just basically dribbles her. And guys, when we say this stuff, like, we're not always going to agree on things, but I guarantee you she knows this.
Well, and hindsight's 2020, and obviously in the moment here, but I think to that point, Hogan's probably looking at this and be like, wait, and as any goalkeeper does, you're thinking, hey, how can I do better? How can I be more efficient? How can I change this? And she's going to look at her position and think, I wonder if I was a step forward, because that's really all it comes down to. I mean, she's about a yard behind on the play. If she was a step forward off this play, she probably just gobbles that up pretty easily. And we're not even talking about it at all. But that it's that one step, that 1 or 2 yard difference that's going to add up here. Mm-hmm. So, but kind of moving forward, I have a few more clips on Hogan's game. I'm trying to show, like, a little bit of kind of what all she can do. And for me, like, this sort of stuff is, she has, this sort of stuff is why I really like her game. Because she does have this complexity where she's thinking out a bit. You can already see from her body shape here. She's not, you see a lot of goalkeepers that get squared up on the ball, but like the shot's not really going to come here. So she's already thinking about the cross, which I love. And this is a really easy play. You can see how she shifts off early as she gets closer to the end line. Like, this is a smart play. I think she trucks her own player on this. But you can see how. You can see how easy it is for her.
And this is better by her, because I think you're right. I think a lot of goalkeepers would stay near post, right? But you can see as this ball gets deeper to the six, so when the ball goes deeper to the end line, she readjusts and she gets more central, because she knows that near post shot's not on. She knows even if it's a miss hit, she can cover it. And now look at the range she covers with this short cross all the way outside the six. It's about 7 yards in the air, and that's good goalkeeping.
Yeah, and it looks really easy, but that's a lot of prep work. That's a lot of thought for that. That's a lot of prep work in practices and training, but that's a lot of mental prep work for what she's doing there. So, and again, just a very, very simple play. Kind of another play here. You know, I think we can get a little bit more of a clear here, but I think the part of her game that I like is that coming off of her line, it just feels natural. Tactically, she knows what she wants to do. She maybe can get a little bit more on this, but she still catches it, gets close to the top of the 18 here. Her team steps on this. So it's funny seeing her feeling so confident on these aerial balls when some goalkeepers are clueless on them, and it looks really easy for her. But then you go back and look on that first play, it's almost like that goal that she gives up. So that's really easy for some goalkeepers, and she struggles a bit off of it. So,
yeah. Look at the crowd. Sorry. Yeah, truly. I love the Portland fans.
Yeah, no, it's a good crowd there. The last play here for me, this is probably the best thing I've seen her do, maybe ever. Certainly this.
This was incredible.
Save. Did you call this?
Was this last season? This was last season.
This might have been last year. I forget. They're all.
Because that's Croy. Bethune, I was watching it screaming like, oh my God, that's that And listen, if you guys, because I know you guys are listening, but this is a save she had against Washington, and the ball pops back out. It's a shot. It pops, and she dives. So she's on the ground, and Corey Bethune hits it first time and just, well, second time, off the half volley. No.
Oh, yeah, then that comes back, yeah.
Yeah, it comes back to her, hits it first time. And the fact she gets up so fast.
Yeah.
This is instinctual goalkeeping. And I will tell you that some people will say you train, and you do train this. You do train this. You do train like a mishit, a deflection. You're on the ground. How do I get up and get my positioning back as well as I can? Like, so she gets back up, set body weight forward, because if she's trying to get up and her body weight's back, this ball goes into the back of the net. So this was literally one of her best saves so far this season.
Yeah. Well, and I think on all that is a very small detail, but you see a lot of goalkeepers do this. Her eyes stay on the play. So everything you just said, she knows what she needs to do, where she's tracking it. And some of this, she's screened a bit, but she knows just either context clues or sounds or whatever. Like, you can just see it as she's getting up off the ground, she's tracking the ball. She hasn't kind of lost sight of it. She's not, you know, like, she's still tracking the play, and that ball's fading a bit off of her, which is great. But great point. I think this goes back to the power aspect for her. Like, she's able to make these big, powerful movements of like that, pushing yourself up like this and then making the save off that. Like, that's a really difficult combination of like moving your body. That's not just standing up. So that's the sort of stuff where it's, I think, and instinctual is a really great word for her. She is a very instinctual goalkeeper. She understands things really well. I love how, and this is just small things, but I love how much her team clearly loves, like, I feel like you see a lot of times goalkeepers make that save and their team's like, yeah, whatever. Like, she's getting a number of players coming over her. She's frustrating the coach, like, you know, or I guess her coach is celebrating. But there's just a lot to this where it's like, okay, she's worth something for me. I think right now in the season, for me, it's like, hey, like, let's give a look at Alvarado for me, because where they are in the standings, yeah, they're fourth, but they've given up a ton of goals. And if they weren't scoring a ton, like, they certainly wouldn't be sending fourth. And I don't think she's one to abandon completely. But if you're running something over and over again where you're getting these hiccups, you're getting these small things here, and you're the best league in the world and you want to go compete, like, you can't just be riding something and just hoping, oh, hey, I hope this smooths out at some point. Like, if you throw someone in the deep end and they start struggling a bit, you know, at some point you've got to pull that. And I don't know if we've quite hit that, but for me, I'm leaning towards Alvarado at this point.
I don't know about that, because I like Alvarado. She's such a great shot stopper and everything like that. I like her size. I like, but they are fourth. Okay. And when the majority of stuff I've seen from Alvarado is not from, obviously not playing, you know, in this.
Yeah.
League.
So I'm rolling clips of her right now. This is from her time in France. So just so people get an idea of her game.
And I like, but I don't know. I don't know if I'd abandon Hogan. And I think what you have is the option, possibly in the summer tournament, maybe like get her some games, because you, like we always say, you want both keepers to be played in. Yep. But right now, with Portland sitting at four, with them doing better and everything, I wouldn't abandon Hogan. I disagree. I wouldn't abandon Hogan. Yeah. But gosh, yeah. It's a hard argument because of how just athletic Alvarado is, what a great shot stopper she is. But I've also seen her with hiccups with distribution and everything like that. So it's kind of like, it's the same thing where you're like, okay, Hogan's doing, you know, like handling like her timing on crosses and services and everything is really good, but then she makes like some hiccups that maybe Alvarado wouldn't make. But then I see Alvarado making hiccups in past clips of her distribution's poor and she's giving the ball away and stuff. So I'm just like, neither one of them is a full package.
No, and you're absolutely right. That's where the you can see that's a little clunky there from striking that ball on your point. It's really kind of where do you want to put your eggs in what basket? I think they're very, very different goalkeepers. Alvarado's a bit more athletic. She can move her feet. She's got a bit more of chaos to her, but she knows how to kind of lean into
it. And she's quicker even with her size.
Yes, yeah, yeah. But I think the big down point on her is, like, playing out can get really clunky, can get really difficult. She's going to get pretty limited. I wouldn't say she'd be the worst in the league, but I think she'd be closer to bottom than even – certainly the top, but maybe even the middle. Like it's not great. But I think the problem for me is like when you have a goalkeeper who Hogan's still, I think in my mind, young in the sense of she's still a bit of a rookie in that just playing time and minutes. She hasn't got a lot of games under her belt. I get concerned of just throwing someone back out there. And when you're seeing mistake after mistake, one, what does that do for that goalkeeper? But also two, what does that do for the other goalkeeper? And we think we've all seen it where someone's playing, they're not playing great. And the backup's asking like, hey, how come I'm not playing? Like, why don't I get a chance? And you may have a reason, you may not have a reason, but you see a lot of times that backup says like, well, I guess I don't have a chance. So now, you know, they start pulling the foot off the gas a bit and just like the level drop. So I don't know the exact scenario I would go down, but I would think, I'm sure in Portland they've had conversations about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, at some point there's a threshold that's going to cross. I don't know if we've quite hit it, but I feel like we're getting very, very close.
Well, yes. And there's going to be a point in the season where you can't go back.
Yeah.
You can't like start from scratch. I say you might have the opportunity in July. I don't know Portland's schedule off the top of my head with the summer. Like everybody's playing a bit during the break. So do you play Alvarez and C? Because then when you enter the final stretch of the season after the Olympics, you know, do you then have a choice to make? But I still think that's late. So I think that's late. Like just like Angel City, we talked about like with Angelina Anderson starting and then Haracic coming in. Well, now I think you stick with Haracic.
Like, well, there has to be, and again, this is stuff that's just kind of out of our purview, but that's a great example. There's a way to make that switch correctly, and there's a way to make that same switch and do it incorrectly, where if you're doing something that is pushing Anderson the wrong way, then you've really messed up kind of your long-term planning there. If you're able to pull Anderson off the field there and make that switch and say, hey, like we've got a long-term plan for you. It's going to look like XYZ.
Right.
We're going to look into these games and this moment. Then Anderson gets to say, okay, you know what? First part of the season wasn't great. It was below my level. I'm prepping now for this game, for that moment, for this, as opposed to like, well, like now I'm just kind of waiting and maybe I get a chance and maybe I don't. Like that sort of thought process, long-term planning, like that's the difference. And it's the same here for me. It's if you have a long-term plan here, we're just going to try something and hope it works out. You know, if you've got something where you planned out where you've got minutes for people, like you're going to see a really high level, because at the end of the day, like goalkeepers typically want to celebrate each other. It's not that adversarial of a situation unless something happens where people are getting unhappy or they're not feeling like they're getting a fair chance.
And I know that when I talked to Becky Tweed about that, I know that the first thing when that switch was made for Angel City, the first thing out of Harchich's mouth was like, is Angelina okay? Like, you know, how do I help support Angelina? I know what it is to go through this transition. And that's the type of goalkeeping crew that you want, you know? And so, you know, that gives a positive mentality to Angelina, as long as you're transparent and say, listen, exactly what you said in the sense of, listen, we have this future mapped out for you and we'll start working through it, you know, and we're going to put DD in and, you know, but you never know what happens. So.
No, you're absolutely right. And certainly wanted to keep an eye on moving forward.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Here. We will take a look at, we talked about her last week here, so we're going to return to Laurel Ivory here. And, you know, I think it's a rough game from her against Washington. They end up dropping the game 3-2. Certainly a game that was winnable, if I'm just being honest. And it's kind of a mixed bag, but I think at the end of the day, like, people are kind of pointing the finger at her, which, you know, I think for herself as well, she knows that she miscues a couple of these. I will say early save here, which I like. And this is kind of one of those things is, you look at the goal we showed against Hogan, Ivory has the quickness to kind of close down a little bit differently. She's maybe still a little deepier than she needs to be, all things considered. But as the ball's played, she's instantly going.
Yeah, I think yes and no, because I think if Bethune takes a touch and gets a little space here, she can get it over Ivory. So I think Ivory's depth here is okay for me. And then she's way at the same time. And so there, Bethune can hit it, yeah, right? And she has the skill to do it. But she's waiting. She's like, okay, she's not going to hit it. Just please slip that ball in there because I'm going to come. And that's the anticipation I'm talking about. And what the hell was her defense doing?
I have thought that all
like so you guys, everybody can be harsh for the 3-2 loss and put this on Ivory, but if you come back and you look at this game, I would be all over the defense. Like, really? There are four of you in the box, two of you right there, and you still get split, and Ivory has to come up with the save. So to me, yeah, she saved you here.
Well, and also, I mean, look at, like, is that Williams at the top of the 18? And then on the
fourth side. Bethune should have laid it across to Williams.
I mean, she's got three options. She's got the other side as well. Like, she's in on the left back there. So, I know you're, and we'll show some more clips. You're going to be pulling your hair out about this. But the one thing I will say, again, like, she's got the queen, and I'm with you on that. She closes well here. She does well to save her team. The one thing I don't love, which I think we'll see again here, when she goes to the spread safe, her hands are a bit back.
Back, yeah.
And then you're going to see this again on the penalty where, because her hands are back, she ends up kind of, the ball ends up rolling off of her. So you want to think about rebounds of where you're pushing that. This ball goes into the body. It's not a big deal. It's a little clunky, but the thought is there.
And look at that clear. Jesus.
Yeah.
Oh, this is why Seattle, and we have to remember something. Seattle really was just not Seattle in the beginning of the season. Yeah. So, like, you know, it's, I equate it to, like, look at Jane Campbell, right? And I said this on air this past weekend, and I was just like, you know, we're talking about how great Jane Campbell was playing, and I'm like, yeah, but she's made like 50 saves and 12 in one game. Her team, like, she's saving Houston, period, right now. Like, you know, so even if she loses, you're like, so okay, there were some goals that she let up and I was just like, all right, well, you're gonna be pissed about that because you shouldn't have let up a near post goal, and that one you should have gotten down to, but the other 12 shots you saved, like,
yeah it's a bit of pressure when your team's averaging one goal a game and you don't have a lot of room for error. So this is later in the game here, still 0-0. Ball gets played back to, I think this is like from a corner or something. The ball gets countered out or something. So the ball gets played back. And this is where I get frustrated with Ivory's game a bit, because you can tell there's intentionality here, right? She intentionally kills this ball because she wants to look at her options here, and we'll get a couple different angles here. But how she flights this ball, I mean, you're asking for a lot there, and you're actually really just hoping and wishing here, because this comes down really fast.
Yeah, and then this is her fault, and this is 100% Ivory's fault, because that's not the ball, and at all. She's got her center back out to the left, wide open. She kills the ball. She has to take three touches to do anything with it. So I don't like the setup. She kills it too dead under her feet. But she, in my opinion, she always she was always planning to serve this ball. Right. When I know that this short ball, yeah, you've got Williams, or is that Rodman?
That might be no, Rodman.
It's Rodman. You've got Rodman poaching, but still, your center back that just popped out wide that should be able to handle that. And then they'll go one touch through the middle. That service is not the service. And if you that's got to go out wide, you can't go up the center with this ball. Look, but this is where Ivory hasn't developed enough. One, two, three, four. There are four Washington players and one of your players where you're serving the ball to.
Well, and I think this is something you get away with in college. You know, like you can do this at Virginia and, you know, you'll basically be fine. But, I mean, this ball doesn't take long to get back down. You know, and again, the defense isn't great on the tackle there. She just gets blown through. But, no, you're absolutely right. You're just asking for a headache. And this isn't going to come back down your way every single time. But, you know.
But when it does, and you have to remember in the NWSL, when it does, it's going to be you're going to have a shot on goal. And that's and you ended up with a goal against. So
yeah, and I think like I mean, look, we can look at the I don't know who the center back is, but like this is a poor tackle here. But no one cares about the tackle. Everyone's saying like, hey, why did you play this ball? And then your teammates are going to think, hey, what are you doing? Like, why are you dropping a free ball here for them to just go run on us? Because we're out of shape now. We've got to go deal with this. I will say, I think she can save this out, or she can save the play. But and we talked about this last week. Is like the athleticism. You know, she's on average at best for league, if not below it. And I think
that if you have a different athletic goalkeeper in here right now, that's a save.
And I would even say, like, if you know, like, I mean, look at the spacing here. You know, she's shooting top the 18. If you can't find some footwork to just get a little bit of, because she's an inch or two off this save, right? So she's in the ballpark. But if she can't find some footwork to push and get your body to cover more of the ground,
right.
Like you're not really thinking about what you can and can't do effectively. Like if you know, hey, you know, I'm not a 6'3 monster that can just cover every corner of the goal, you've got to find a way to move your feet. And whereas like for me, it feels very stuck in mud here. Yeah. I'm sure part of it's mentally. She's a bit frustrated from the turnover. I understand that. Maybe a bit overwhelmed. Who knows?
Yeah, but should amp you up even more to save your butt. Yeah. And to me, what she does here is she double sets and she sets two. She's already too wide. She double sets stagnant and not a quick step to the right. Like she's got to have some sort of a gauge that Bethune is curling this. I mean, it's kind of obvious. And then she still sets flat, which makes her look like she's stuck in mud. So you're absolutely right. She gets absolutely no push off whatsoever. Yeah. And I think I tell you 9 out of 10 times, if she sets and does this right, she makes a save.
Yeah, because that's not buried all the way over. It's not a bad shot, but it's not all the way over. It looks farther over than it is because she tips it towards the post there. Yeah. That's coming in and she pushes it back. So, you know, we see that play and we move forward here. It's 1-0. And this is kind of what I was talking about with the hands being back on the spread save. So when we zoom in here a little bit, you'll see because she steps here for the spread save, which is fine. You know, she's doing what she can, but this ball's going to roll off of her because she's kind of spinning out of it. She's leaning out of it a little bit here. When this is one of those things where you've got to be brave and keep this ball going away from your goal, not going into it.
Yeah. Well, what you're seeing her do here is that flinch, right? So her body is turning actually away from Rodman, her head and everything. And it's good. Like her weight is not proper on the spread save. So that's why this goes back behind her. And then what she do? She takes out Rod.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think technically, and look, that's why we're here, gloves off. But this is pro, you guys. And technically this has to be better, you know? And so, yes. Did I think there's some mistakes on the defense, but and we can get into defense at 100%. Like, why is Rodman so open, the weak side? Like, this is one of the best players in the world. And she's just sitting over there like, hey, pass me a ball. Yeah. So that's gotta be tightened up. But our whole job as goalkeepers is to clean up the mess. Right. And so I think technically she needs to tighten things up. Now, listen, I've seen Ivy make some huge saves. Right. But you don't want to be the goalkeeper that comes up with one or two huge saves. You want to be the goalkeeper that's consistent. That's the goalkeeper that wins games.
Well, I kind of wonder if there, and this is me, I guess I could be completely off here, but I do kind of wonder if there's a bit of a disconnect. You talk about being the goalkeeper who makes saves. Like that's a part of a team collective effort. Whereas right. as this ball spills, I don't get the sense that Ivory thinks, oh, my teammates who are very, very close to play, they're going to solve it. Because I think they can. But right. she's thinking, they're not going to solve it. I need to go insert myself. And this is where the penalty comes. You don't see the penalty on it. But that's the foul from Ivory there, where mm-hmm. she's rushing to get this ball. And, you know, I don't love that Rahman like, is basically on top of her. So this basically it's tough for Ivory to move. But knowing that you're always going to get this called against you, like you can't be, you know, tussling with this attacker who's in on goal and not.
No, it's a foul.
Yeah.
It's a foul.
But I kind of wonder, is like, is that a product of lack of trust in the defense? Because we've seen a number of times already just this game, defense is doing who knows what. Yeah. And thinking, I need, and it's a kind of a Campbell thing. It feels like I need to go do more. Like, no, yeah. like you've got to be able to trust them and do their job. So.
But what we also don't know here, I know we're running really long, but what we also don't know here is we see that stagnant, like on the first goal and stuff like that, where was on the first save and everything like that. But I don't know the level of Ivory's communication.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and even when I'm broadcasting, I can't hear that really. Like, you're not, it'd be great to have a mic on the keeper to hear what they're saying. So are you organizing? Were you organizing the week? Because your first job in this penalty was to organize your weak side, right? You've got your center backs organizing what's going on around the ball, but why is your weak side out of position?
Yeah.
Right? Your weak side's totally out of position, which allows this through ball. Your two center backs aren't connected, or your weak side and your center back aren't connected, which keeps Rodman onside. So what is your communication here as a goalkeeper? Was that your first thought? I got to make sure Rodman's like pinch in, watch the through ball, watch the long ball. That's like rule number one, because that's where you're susceptible. Like you've got your team organizing around the ball, you know? So
yeah. I love the goalkeeper mic for, I think that would be really entertaining for me. I feel like for most people, they'd enjoy hearing what they
have. Well, I think for goalkeeper coaches, it'd be interesting because I would want to know. Yeah. I would want to come back and I'd assess this. What was building up? What were you telling your defense right here?
Yeah.
Like your job is to organize, like even when we have the ball, your job is to still make sure your chess pieces are in place in case the ball gets turned over. That didn't happen here, which is why Rodman was wide open.
Yeah.
And I would have loved to have known that and said, well, you weren't saying anything.
Well, yeah. And so on this next, this is the third goal here, and you can see Ivory pointing, and this is the big question of like, well, what is actually being said? Can they hear? It just depends on what the crowd's doing at the time. But she knows there's a problem there.
Right.
But I mean, like this is, I mean, that is eons of space. Like I don't know what's going on here at all. And I think from a goalkeeper's point of view, like this is so deflating. Like you're trying this, you're trying that, and like you feel like you can't make any mistake because you know you're going to be looking at something like this, and this is just an easy goal here. Just knock this in. But you know, Ivory sees it, but for some reason, like they kind of gap around in a weird way where it's not too hard to flight that ball. I mean, she's got like 4 or 5 yards around her, so. You know, it's a team issue at the end of the day, but yeah, I think
that's on. She's saying markup, right? Never understood pointing that arm. By the way, I've never understood that. Like, you don't need to point your arm. Like, just say, you know, just say so and so. Watch each side. You can just say it, and you don't even have to look because you already know what you have to do. And I tell my goalkeepers this all the time. I'm like, why are you pointing? Like, and trying to focus this way. You're just say it, and you don't need to look and make sure it's being done. Once you say it, they need to make sure it's being done.
Yeah.
But the other thing, this goes on a defense for me. And look, do I think maybe a Murphy takes a different line on this with her size and she actually gets to this? This is a really good ball because this is a dipping driven ball. But I think some other goalkeepers probably come and pop and box this and make a tap. Now, I think her thought process is she was supposed to be marked up. I was yelling it.
Yeah, I mean, she is more than open there. Yeah, no, I think that's a tough ball to come get. If someone punches that way, that's a good play. I mean, really good play there. But
it is.
I think you're right. I think some do come for that. And I think Ivory knows she can't quite get there. So she's holding line. But she's expecting other people to do her job there or do their job there. Yeah. So last clip here I'll show. And this is just a small thing, but again, this is what I like about Ivory's game. She is trying to weigh options. She's looking around. You can tell her head's on a bit of a swivel here. She's picked up this ball. She's looking to distribute quick. She looks around. She looks right. She looks central, looks left. Doesn't like it. So she lets things get spaced out here. She's looking for something here. She's maybe looking a little too far left here because as she rolls out here, she's staring down her target. And I don't think that's a badly hit ball as far as a technique goes, but I think when you think of what's actually going to help the game, I mean, this is something that it looks like the other team's kind of read you a bit and they know where you're going.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty obvious where she's going.
Yeah, and now they're able to go swarm that.
Yeah, and I don't really know the intention on this ball in the sense like,
yeah,
like this is what I'm saying. You're taking that much time and everything like that. Is that the best ball? You know, and honestly, like it's just that ball actually, in my opinion, if you're going to roll this ball to yourself and hit it there, I know what she's looking for. She's looking for the flick here over the top into space. Why not just go over the top? And if you don't have the leg for it, then that's another problem, right? Yeah. But like, I would rather see this, you hit the ball into the space over the top of the back line. Why not? Well,
and I think this is the great tension for me with Ivory. Like, she's got some good ideas here. It's just the execution gets off. And part of this could just be like getting settled in. I mean, we talk about Hogan not having a ton of minutes. Ivory is, I mean, a third of that or so. She's still pretty fresh in a lot of ways. So I understand that. But you've got to think about just from a selling point of like, hey, you've already turned over a bad ball, and she had the other ones in this game as well. Like, you're trying to thread needles after like you've already been picked off a bit. Like,
but at the same time, I go going back to the defense. Why was it taking them so long to expand? Right. So you see her get the ball. Everybody's like la 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 la.
Yeah, I think they're just expecting her to go forward here. It's like,
but you still got to give the options. You know, you're outside midfield. What are you doing? Drop back. This should be all these two center backs, these two backs should be, they should have gotten expanded wider, because what you're doing right now is now she really doesn't have any options, because like Washington has it locked down in the up top right now with the press.
Yeah.
Like, there's no place for her to go really short, yeah. You know? So,
yeah, those outside backs, like, they run up field so far, like, one, it takes time, but also two, like, it's really tough to connect that now because they're like Washington just gets set in, like they're doing.
Yeah, they've got it. Yeah.
You get flat, you're gonna start opening things up. But
yeah.
Well, man, there's so much. I'm gonna even cut here because we are rolling a little bit. I do want to talk about Mackenzie Wood next week because
for sure.
But it's been
we spent 40 minutes on the Hall of Fame.
No, I think that it shows like it's serious, you know, like it's, you look at the reverence for the Baseball Hall of Fame and really any Hall of Fame, you know, you're only as revered as you are taken seriously from your own self. Like, if you're just goofing around and, you know, this and that, like, you know, people aren't going to really respect it. And, you know, the U.S. Soccer Hall of Fame, like, they don't have a great history. Like, it was like 2010 or so that they finally got more players and executives in, which is crazy to think about. But, you know, if you want to have something done well and be revered and be respected, like, you've got to put it in a high standard for yourself and not just be convenient with this and that. So I'm okay talking about it, like, because it's a serious thing. So, but no, it's plenty of goalkeepers to talk about. We'll hit it again next week. But yeah, it's good, Saskia.
We'll probably have some U.S. stuff to talk about too.
We'll
see. Game this weekend.
I imagine did well filling in for you for, you know, him doing time, but we get the real deal back here with you. So it's
all good. All right.
Good. Yeah. But all you can find us on Instagram, on Twitter, and of course the Union app here. Saskia Weber on the Union app. Is that right?
It's just Saskia on the Union app.
Okay, yeah, and I'm Bill Reno on the Union app. So ping us those questions here. We love having people comment. One, it just gives us more content to talk about, but also, too, love hearing back from y'all. So appreciate all that. Saskia, you want to close us out here?
I said, and we're always, and now our new home on Believe Network. So you can listen to the podcast and the Inside the Eight Team podcast. And we've got a lot more under the Union umbrella coming to the network and everything. But, yeah, hit us up and it's great hearing from you guys. I love it. And I'll work on that goalkeeper mic.
Yeah. We'll see what we can do. All right. We'll see y'all next week here.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.